This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tragedy in the Bronx. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay on this Friday, December 29th. And here's what we have for you this morning.
At least 12 people have died and several were critically injured in an apartment fire in the Bronx, New York City's worst fire tragedy in decades.
Police are promising a bigger security detail than ever before in Times Square for this year's New Year's Eve celebration, which will cap off a year that saw a number of deadly attacks on innocent crowds.
Rose Marie, the wisecracking Sally Rogers of the Dick Van Dyke Show and a show business lifer, has died at the age of 94.
The IRS says many homeowners who prepaid property taxes this week may still face a cap on deductions.
And all we have is the IRS ruling. People assumed, and tax accountants told people, that, well, because there was no legislative history and there was nothing explicitly in the federal tax reform law that said this, that perhaps they could deduct next year's property taxes on this year's income tax form. So a number of people decided, you know, they ran the numbers and they decided it would save them $1,000 or more, and they decided to give it a try.
Patricia Sullivan of the Washington Post will be here in about 10 minutes to sort out that very confusing tax situation. Investigators in New York City are searching for the cause of a blaze that ripped through an apartment building in the Bronx, killing at least 12 people and critically injuring four in the city's deadliest fire in 25 years. The victims range in age from 1 to over 50. Firefighters rescued 12 people from the building. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
This is the worst fire tragedy we have seen in this city in at least a quarter century, based on the information we have now.
The fire broke out a little before 7 p.m. on the first floor of a brick building and quickly spread upstairs. This resident barely made it out.
I came out through the window.
You came out through the window?
Yeah, there was smoke everywhere already. When I came through the door was, I couldn't see the door, was engulfed with smoke already.
The blaze erupted in the Belmont section of the Bronx, a primarily residential, close-knit neighborhood known as the Little Italy of the borough, adjacent to the Bronx Zoo and Fordham University. More than 160 firefighters responded to the four-alarm blaze. New Year's Eve in New York City has long drawn a heavy security presence, but after the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history in Las Vegas in October, there's yet another threat, people who could shoot from buildings. NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill says police will send rooftop observation teams and counter snipers into more buildings this year.
We're going to have reaction teams close by all the buildings in Times Square that night, and there's going to be observation posts that have sniper capability also.
For the first time, the police department is planning to attach reflective markers to the outside of buildings at certain intervals so that in the event of an attack, officers can quickly figure out what floor a gunman is on. Officials say there have been no direct credible threats to New York City, but police will be out in full force in an abundance of caution. An Alabama judge has denied an election complaint from Republican Roy Moore, who had alleged potential voter fraud in the state's special election. Alabama Circuit Judge Johnny Hardwick denied Moore's attempt to halt the certification of the results from the special election held on December 12th for the vacant Senate seat in Alabama, assuring the victory for Democrat Doug Jones. Alabama Secretary of State John Merrill.
If there was ever a question about whether or not the state of Alabama conducts honest and fair, safe and secure elections, that question's been eliminated from anyone's thought and mind. Period.
Moore has refused to concede after losing the race to Jones by more than 20,000 votes. Jones's campaign called Moore's challenge a desperate attempt to subvert the will of the people. Jones is the first Democrat in a generation to win a Senate seat in Alabama. Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa K. Reminder, we can connect on social media. Friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. Well, people across the country rushed this week to pay their 2018 property taxes early, hoping to take advantage one last time of a federal deduction that will be scaled back under the new tax rules. But the IRS then announced those prepayments may be deducted only in limited circumstances. Patricia Sullivan of The Washington Post joins us now with more. Patricia, let's start first with who was lining up to pay this week?
Oh, there were thousands of people in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. areas who were lining up to pay, mostly people who have homes that are slightly more expensive than average, but not necessarily extraordinarily costly homes, just because the property tax is so high in this area.
And did the rules change based on the municipality where people live? Do they know what the rules are?
Well, the rules are, there are no rules at the moment. I mean, all we have is the IRS ruling. People assumed, and tax accountants told people that, well, because there was no legislative history and there was nothing explicitly in the federal tax reform law that said this, that perhaps they could deduct next year's property taxes on this year's income tax form. So a number of people decided, you know, they ran the numbers and they decided it would save them $1,000 or more, and they decided to give it a try. And so that's why they did it. However, the IRS came out with a rule that said that probably won't work unless your community has assessed your 2018 property taxes by the end of 2017, which hasn't happened for most of the jurisdictions in this area.
Were municipal officials caught off guard by the lines of people they saw this week?
Oh, definitely. You know, like everywhere else, a lot of people take the last week of the year off, you know, for family and for vacations. And so there were skeleton crews at these, you know, Treasury departments, revenue collection departments. And when 1,000 people show up and 500 people, you know, clog the phone lines, you know, that's a challenge for, you know, local governments to handle.
We're speaking with Patricia Sullivan of The Washington Post. Patricia, do you think the IRS was also caught off guard? Do you think that they had an inkling this could happen?
I don't know. I don't have any insight into the IRS's thought process on this. I think the fact that the tax reform bill passed so quickly and right before the holidays that all of the government bureaucrats you know, didn't have a chance to study it, didn't have a chance to figure out what the legislation meant. You know, I think that they probably acted as fast as they could, but unfortunately, consumers and citizens acted faster.
Yeah, they sure did. When do most towns do their assessments for the fiscal year?
In this area, it depends on where you live, but in this area, Northern Virginia, the District of Columbia, and suburban Maryland around the Washington area, most of them do it at the beginning of the year. So we're talking sometime between January 1st and the end of February. They need about 6 weeks to do the assessments of the properties and see if your property value has changed. That, of course, matters when you apply whatever the tax rate will be. So although some citizens are now calling for refunds and saying, well, just do the assessments faster, that's pretty much an impossibility in the next 2 days for a, you know, a local government to do.
This is really a mass confusion, isn't it?
It is, and it's a complicated area of government. Most people barely understand their tax bills, understandably, because you have several, you know, changes, you know, going on at once. And then when the federal tax rules change, and so quickly, and with such little notice, everyone's caught off guard. And an attempt by homeowners to save some money on their taxes just doesn't seem to have worked. Although, you know, this might be challenged in court. Who knows?
Patricia, do you think people who paid this week might come to regret doing that?
The people I talked to yesterday said, well, they realized they were taking a chance, but they thought it was worth taking the chance because they could save, you know, in the case of several people I talked to, $1,000 or more. And they said, if it doesn't work, well, we'll ask for a refund or we'll just have our taxes paid early And if it does work, we've saved money.
There probably will be no other group of people more crazed and busy than accountants over the next few months, right?
I think you're absolutely correct on that. Accountants were also taken by surprise. I talked to a couple of accountants in line prepaying their taxes as well. They didn't have any more insight than the rest of us had.
That's Patricia Sullivan of the Washington Post on that very confusing story about the IRS and property taxes. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay here now with more of America's First News.
While Jen, gusty winds fueled a fast-moving apartment building fire in the Bronx section of New York City last night, killing at least 12 people and sending four to the hospital in critical condition. Stunned evacuees barely had time to flee down a fire escape as flames tore through their homes. This nearby resident was handing out sneakers, blankets, and clothing.
It's human nature. It's fine.
All right.
It's fine. They're going to need it more than I am.
A nearby school has been set up to shelter those evacuated from the building. Apple is sorry. The company admits to secretly slowing down older iPhones, but says it was to spare users unexpected shutdowns because of battery fatigue. Apple's apologizing and is cutting the price of a battery replacement by $50 to $29. The replacement plan begins in late January for anyone with an iPhone 6 or later that requires a new battery. The Miss American organization vows to rebuild after an email scandal led to the resignation of its top leaders last week, but some former Miss Americas are trashing the plan to create a search committee of former pageant winners and state directors, saying more substantial changes are needed, including replacing the entire board of directors. It's the last trading day of the year, a stellar one for markets overall and huge for the benchmark Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow's on track to mark its sixth straight week of gains, which hasn't happened since 1954. It notched its 71st record close yesterday. South Korea is holding a Hong Kong-flagged ship and its crew for allegedly violating UN sanctions by transferring oil to a North Korean vessel in October. South Korea formally seized the ship after the UN Security Council last week imposed new sanctions on North Korea that allow member states to seize, inspect, and freeze vessels that are suspected of transferring banned goods to or from North Korea. Well, how cold was it at New England's highest peak this week? The Mount Washington Observatory in New Hampshire has posted a video showing a weather observer emptying a pitcher of boiling water into the air, and it turns instantly to snow. No special effects. With the temperature at 31 degrees below zero and hurricane force winds, the wind chill at Mount Washington was 84 degrees below zero.
Completely incomprehensible. I don't get that.
I want to go put on another sweater right now.
Oh my gosh. It was 13 here this morning, and that's bad enough. Yuck. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay this week. Well, he promised to be a different kind of politician, and so far he has been. President Trump in 2017 broke with tradition in a number of ways. One of the most contentious has been his feuds with professional athletes and their leagues. This morning's Gordon Deal has more.
We're speaking with Dave Nakamura, Washington Post White House correspondent. We're talking about President Trump and all these tweets, and the title of the piece is, "For Trump, fighting with athletes is political sport." So set up the basics. What'd you look at here, Dave?
Basically, you know, we all know that there's a tradition now, dating back at least since Ronald Reagan, of presidents inviting sports teams to the White House to celebrate championship teams. And mostly the presidents, both Republican and Democrat, have continued that tradition because I think they like being standing up there with athletes who transcend politics, who are broadly popular. They get a pretty easy photo op. Everybody's happy. Everybody wins. This president, like many aspects, has split from his predecessors and has used sports to basically drive home more wedges in the community and the culture wars, and has made athletes sort of his foils, whether it's the national anthem debate or, you know, his fights with Steph Curry and LeBron James over whether the Golden State Warriors would come to the White House. So he keeps it going. We've seen now him get in a fight with these parents of the UCLA players, in particular LeVar Ball, over Trump's, you know, apparent help in getting them out of China on the shoplifting charge. Trump seems to relish in these kind of moments, and he doesn't seem to use the sort of the gloss and excitement around sports in a positive vein like his predecessors did.
Yeah, well, I think, and I'm not taking sides, but I think largely that gloss seems to have worn off with a lot of professional athletes. Maybe he's seized on that.
He has. I mean, some of it he says, you know, look, I've been attacked, and people like Steph Curry have publicly stated they don't want to come to the White House like champions have, so I'm just cracking back and attacking them back.
Yeah.
You know, and his father wasn't grateful enough. But I think others would say, look, I mean, past presidents have had some players here and there not attend. Tom Brady didn't to come to the White House one time with the Patriots when Obama was president. Some thought there might have been a political aspect to that. There's been other players. But past presidents have said, look, and I talked to some of their aides yesterday, said, look, it's not a big deal. I mean, you're free to come or not. But the point is we stand up there and we invite donors and we invite congress members of those, you know, those cities that win. And it's every, you know, whether it's Republican or Democrat, no one cares. It's, you know, you're standing up there, you get a good headline. You know, the president cracks some jokes and he gets a jersey. This president doesn't do that. I also looked at, you know, the idea that presidents like George Bush have thrown out the first pitch at baseball games. Yeah. Bush famously did it after 9/11, really a big moment for the country, despite what you think about what happened after with the wars and so on. Still is remembered as sort of a stirring moment where he threw a strike right there at Yankee Stadium. Trump hasn't really done that. He's gone to a couple golf tournaments in his home state and his home course, but other than that, hasn't really gone to any. He turned down a chance to pick games for the NCAA tournament the way President Obama did on ESPN, and he hasn't gone to throw out any kind of baseball. So it's a different kind of presidency. We know that, and I was just taking another look at another way that Trump has altered that tradition.
Mm. We're speaking with Dave Nakamura, White House correspondent at The Washington Post. His piece is called "For Trump, Fighting with Athletes is Political Sport." I wonder how he has time to do this sometimes. I know he doesn't sleep much, but man, he just seems to...
His staff likes to try to say, look, it's not a big deal. It doesn't take long to bang out a tweet, which is true, maybe. But he does seem to, you know, sort of live tweet TV. We know that, so he seems to be watching TV as much as he protests that idea. He seems to sort of be fighting back about what he sees on television. But, you know, look, the president, I think he thinks he's winning on some of these issues, like the debate over the anthem and the protests related around police brutality from some of the NFL players. But yeah. I think the other side would say, look, he's not winning any broader fans, which is what most presidents try to do, is broaden your base. He wants to sort of just secure his base, whatever exists of it, and that he's inflaming, you know, racial and cultural hostilities in the country, and has criticized mostly African American athletes, and that is another aspect of this, and I think that is angering a lot of people on the other side.
I guess you could at this point say his point has been made, but
he tends not to let up, though.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
He tends not to let up. Trump's going to keep at it. I think he thinks that he's, you know, on the right side in terms of what his base wants to see.
Right.
And, you know, people told me, look, this issue of how he deals with sports and athletes, no different than the way Trump has dealt with some of the issues around Gold Star military families. Like, we remember he's sort of gotten into fights with some of those families who've lost loved ones in the theater of war.
David Nakamura of The Washington Post with Gordon Deal. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to 35% off select business PCs now until the end of December. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
It's Friday, December 29th. I'm Jennifer Kishinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines. New York City's worst fire in 25 years has killed at least 12 in the Bronx. At least 15 have died in a restaurant fire in Mumbai. Alabama has certified Democrat Doug Jones as the winner of the U.S. Senate race, despite a formal protest from Republican Roy Moore. Rose Marie, known for her role on The Dick Van Dyke Show, has died at the age of 94. College football bowl winners from yesterday, TCU, Michigan State, Navy, and Oklahoma State. And there's finally a good use for that awful fruitcake. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, we all want to see social networks cleared of inappropriate content, but did you ever stop to wonder who might be responsible for doing that? Lauren Weber of the Wall Street Journal has written an article entitled "The Worst Job in Tech: Keeping Facebook Clean." Lauren, who is responsible for this cleanup?
Well, there is a whole category of workers that's basically arisen because of the internet called content moderators or content reviewers. And these are people who are reviewing usually posts or videos or user-generated content that has been flagged by other users as potentially inappropriate.
Were these people trained to do this job, or how were they trained?
It's a very difficult job, both emotionally, because sometimes people are viewing very disturbing material, and also because a lot of it requires judgment calls. You know, it's not a simple thing to identify what is hate speech and what's not, or what violates the terms of service of a website, a social media site, and what doesn't. So it does require training. From what we found, I wrote this story with a colleague, and we spoke to about 24 content moderators. Some received weeks of training, some received a few hours of training, but in the end, we came away feeling that, you know, as I said, this is a very difficult job to do, both emotionally and it's very intellectually challenging.
What kinds of stuff are the Facebook employees seeing?
It's not just Facebook. It's also Twitter, YouTube, you know, any site where people are posting their own content, or, you know, groups or others that want to send a message out there are posting content. For example, ISIS tends to be very active on social media sites. There is a lot of terrible stuff on the internet that most of us don't see at all, thanks to the work of content moderators. But when we spoke to people doing the work, they are viewing incredibly violent material, everything from beheadings by terror groups to sexual exploitation of children, violence against animals. Basically, you know, you really do see the underbelly of what humans are capable of, and it's most of us don't get exposed to that very often.
We're speaking with Lauren Weber of the Wall Street Journal. Lauren, when they see something disturbing, what happens next?
There are a few different things that can happen. When content moderator sees something that explicitly and clearly violates the terms of service of the website that they're working for, sometimes they disable a user's account. Sometimes they simply remove that material but keep the website up. If it's material that clearly shows some kind of criminal activity going on, all of the major sites have agreements with law enforcement and organizations like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, where they will report that and put it into the appropriate hands of the appropriate agency or government group that can deal with it.
I think a lot of people were under the assumption that artificial intelligence or algorithms was taking care of this and not so much human beings, but there's no way to take the human out of it.
You're absolutely right. And most of the comments that I've gotten or emails that I've gotten from readers are basically saying, like, I'm sure they can figure this out, you know, how to automate this so that people don't have to do this kind of very difficult work. But the technology is just not there yet, and it probably won't be for a long time. For example, AI, you know, artificial intelligence, can in many cases identify nudity. But it's not so clear. You know, Facebook got in big trouble when a moderator took down a very famous photo from the Vietnam War of a naked girl who had been exposed to napalm. I believe that photo won a Pulitzer Prize. They got in big trouble because somebody looked at it, said, well, that violates the terms of service. We don't have pictures of naked children on the website, and took it down. So, you know, there are these ambiguous cases where, you know, you don't necessarily, you do need some human judgment.
Thanks, Lauren. Lauren Weber of the Wall Street Journal. It's 21 minutes before the hour. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Well, this is the time of year you get the end of year list, some profound, some sentimental. Wall Street Journal sports columnist Jason Gay has his own take on the best sports stories of the year and joins us now. Jason, you highlight the renewed rivalry between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Why does that stand out?
I think that's the one that made me the most happy. And quite frankly, this list is all about my own personal happiness, right? Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, they had been obviously the class of their sport for a great long time, but there was some doubt entering 2017 if we'd ever see them reach the top level of tennis. And bang, it happened right off the bat in Australia, meeting in the final, a classic five-setter. And then it really continued from there. They traded Grand Slams. Federer wound up winning two, Wimbledon in Australia. Nadal won the U.S. Open as well as in Paris. And they finished the year 1-2, Nadal number one. I mean, this is a revival I never really anticipated. I think people who love them, love the sport, were just thrilled to watch it. You know, injuries played a role in this at Forrest, Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, banged up throughout the year, but what a fun revival for tennis.
Jason, it was a sports shocker that probably a lot of people didn't even watch, but Morgan William of Mississippi State took down UConn in the women's Final Four. Would you say that's the biggest shock this year?
Anytime UConn loses a basketball game is a shock, right? I mean, entering last year's Final Four, they had won 111 games in a row. Think about that. That's a spectacular streak. That's bigger than anything UCLA ever accomplished. And, you know, Mississippi State, tie game, Morgan Williams taking the ball down the court, just ice in her veins, sinks that jumper. It is just a great, great sports moment. They ended up losing in the final to South Carolina. But in terms of a singular moment that just as people will always remember, that's a pretty great one.
Now, of course, when you talk about baseball, some TV execs might have been bemoaning the fact that there weren't major teams involved or big city teams involved. But we got something pretty special from the Astros and Dodgers.
Oh, absolutely. I think this was a tremendous year for baseball. I mean, coming off of what was a good year in 2016, a great year, frankly, with the Chicago Cubs making history, winning a World Series, a very, very highly rated Game 7. 2017 picked right up where that left off. We had really resurgent years with the Los Angeles Dodgers, with the New York Yankees being a lot better than people anticipated. And the Houston Astros, I mean, they might not be, you know, an iconic championship team, but here they were with this really, really fun, balanced club of young stars and some cagey vets like Justin Verlander, who was a late-season pickup for them, and played tremendously, took the Dodgers 7, won the World Series. It was a really, really good year for a sport that has had a bunch of knocks in the last decade or so. As it sort of gets a little older, there's some worry that baseball fans are aging up and we're not seeing like the growth with young players and young people, or young fans rather. But I think they've put together a couple of really good years, and hopefully that'll pay dividends down the road.
We're speaking with Jason Gay of the Wall Street Journal. Jason, when it comes to the NBA, the Warriors have been outstanding, but there's a lot of parity in the NBA. Is it still fun?
I think so. I think the NBA is having the greatest renaissance of any major sport in America right now. I mean, you have obviously this one-of-a-kind team with the Warriors that won two of the three NBA championships. They have a great rival in the Cleveland Cavaliers. But then you look around the league, and there are a lot of great stories in places like Boston, Philadelphia, even the Knicks, who have been sort of dead in the water for the past decade or so, have a great, great story to tell with Kristaps Porzingis and a bunch of young players who are really making a splash. You have some exciting things happening in other cities like Oklahoma City. You know, we have a threesome there who are great in Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George. Indiana looking quite good. You know, there's a lot of interesting storylines around the league, and that just sort of speaks to the overall health of the NBA. The ratings are way up as well.
All right, Jason, what's your take on the NFL?
I think, you know, the NFL had probably the bumpiest season any of us can remember in terms of just the way that they got kicked around in the public sphere. Obviously, politics entering a role, the president taking them on in terms of the player protests that were revolved around, you know, sort of misconstrued, frankly, around the issue of the national anthem when they were not really about the national anthem. But that really became this lightning rod issue. There were questions about ratings. There were questions about attendance. You know, of course, player injuries are always part of the issues for the NFL. So it was a bumpy ride for them.
Thanks, Jason. Jason Gay of the Wall Street Journal. It's 12 minutes before the hour on this morning, America's First News. We're going to deal with a week off. Jennifer Kashinka and Rasa Kay in. Well, some of the world's largest employers no longer sell things, they rent workers. The list of the world's largest employers was once dominated by household names like Ford, JCPenney, and GE, companies that made and sold things. But a new analysis conducted for the Wall Street Journal shows those names are nowhere to be found on a list today. In their place are large outsourcing companies like Compass Group PLC, Accenture PLC, and other businesses that essentially lease workers to clients. Of the top 20 global employers in 2017, five are outsourcing and workforce solutions companies. In 2000, only one employer in the top 20, IBM, fell into that category. Outsourcing companies are vacuuming up the world's workers as traditional employers are handing over more of their tasks to non-employees, a shift that has transformed the way corporations do business and had profound effects on workers' prospects and pay. For employers, dispatching work to outside companies saves money and lets them access skills they need without adding to their headcount. A growing body of economic research suggests outsourcing is a significant factor fueling the rise in income inequality in the past decade. It's 8 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay here with more of today's top stories.
Well, Jennifer, at least 12 people have been killed and four others critically injured in a fire at an apartment building in the Bronx borough of New York. Mayor Bill de Blasio's voice shook as he noted the fire was the deadliest in the city for at least 25 years.
Hold your families close and keep these families here in the Bronx in your prayers.
The victims include a one-year-old child. Over 150 firefighters helped bring the blaze under control. The cause of the fire near Fordham University in the Bronx Zoo, not yet clear. The deepening cold across the U.S. is prompting official action. Two cities in New Jersey have canceled their scheduled polar plunges. Ocean City and Ventnor officials cited safety concerns in calling off the New Year's Day events. To ensure there's plenty of fuel to keep furnaces firing, Connecticut's Department of Motor Vehicles has granted a waiver to allow drivers of fuel trucks to work beyond their time limits. The annual ball drop in Times Square New Year's Eve is expected to take place in record cold and in unprecedented security. Nearby garages will be closed, and the New York Police Department will have officers in every hotel along 7th Avenue. Manhattan South Chief William Morris says visitors will be thoroughly checked out.
There's a level of screening out on the avenues, be it 6th Avenue or 8th Avenue, and there's a further level of screening once the person walks down the sidewalk into the spectator area. There'll be a second level of screening there.
In Turkey, police have picked up 29 suspected Islamic State militants in the capital of Ankara who were allegedly preparing to carry out attacks during New Year celebrations. The state-run news agency reports some 500 officers took part in simultaneous raids to detain the suspects, many of them foreign nationals. President Vladimir Putin of Russia says the explosion at a supermarket in Russia's second-largest city Wednesday was a terror attack. He told people gathered at a Kremlin event he's ordered security agencies to liquidate terror suspects on the spot if they resist arrest. Japanese giant SoftBank's taking a large stake in Uber, leading a consortium that reportedly will invest at least $8 billion for a roughly 15% stake in the San Francisco-based ride-hailing company. And the U.S. Census Bureau predicts U.S. population will grow by one person every 18 seconds in 2018. Here's the math. One birth every 8 seconds, a death every 10 seconds, and then add one person through net international migration every 29 seconds.
And that just boggles my mind.
There's a calculation for everything, girl.
Thanks, Rosic. What to do with that fruitcake you never wanted? While some have used it as a doorstop, a dartboard, or a knife rack, some long-distance hikers, skiers, and cyclists actually love it, and they want it. Avid exercisers say fruitcake is better than any energy bar, which can be too sugary and sometimes come in weird flavors. Athletes call fruitcake an efficient way to refuel. Loaded with dried fruit, nuts, and just enough cake to hold the mix together, fruitcake is calorically dense and full of vitamins and minerals, a great food for someone hiking 2,000 miles with a quarter of their body weight on their back. Nutritionist and author of Pack Light, Eat Right, Brenda Batten, says hikers are burning out on GORP, a trail mix that contains nuts, fruits, and other ingredients. Companies are starting to notice. Claxton Bakery makes a fruitcake packed with a concoction of pecans, almonds, walnuts, cherries, and green and red-colored pineapple. Among the company's products for people on the go are individually wrapped slices called Clax Snacks. Collins Street Bakery, a large producer in Texas, plans to start selling fruitcake bars in 2018. But even with this newfound use, still, many think fruitcake is just awful. That'll do it for this hour. For Rosic Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.